services, and organizations that benefit you as a citizen of Forsyth County. Welcome to Empowering You, your host, Brian Anthony.
It is high noon in the triad. What a great day to be alive. Good afternoon. This is Empowering You. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Brian Anthony, General Manager of WSNC 90.5 FM. Empowering You is a show where we highlight nonprofits in our city, county, and region, and the many services they provide the citizens of Forsyth County and the Triad. Also, we feature corporations, local corporations that have community initiatives designed to benefit you and to continue to make our region a great place to live. Not only will we feature nonprofits and corporate community initiatives, we also will hear from local entities like the City of Winston-Salem, the Health Department, the Winston-Salem Forsyth County Schools, and a piece that we speak to the title of this show with, Empowering You, by speaking on empowerment with Women's Forsyth Magazine editor and publisher Brooke Eagle. All packed into a one-hour show, we hope that you make it a point, you find the interest in it, you find great information, and make it a point to join us every Sunday following Money Making Conversations at noon. Also, if you happen to miss it, a lot of people are still in church or getting out of church. If you miss it, any portion of it, the podcast will be available on our website, as is all of our public affairs programming, just by logging on to WSNCRadio.org and clicking media on our navigation bar. You can also access our website, many people don't know this, on our free mobile app that you can download in your device's App Store, whether that be App Store or Play Store. Just simply search WSNC FM 90.5. Okay, a couple of weeks ago, for those of you that are at Downtown Jazz quite a bit frequently and enjoy the music that comes out of that, an enjoyable evening in downtown Winston-Salem, the opening act for Marcus Anderson on the last show, always when I'm seeing local talent for the first time, it amazes me. Because, first of all, I haven't heard of this local artist. Hadn't heard of this local artist, hadn't heard of the circumstances and the school that presented it. And I'm trying to be vague so I can introduce him properly without letting you know who I'm talking about. But anyway, I was pretty pleased to see that this gentleman was able to garner this crowd. It's a very well-knowing jazz crowd, so they know their music, they know their jazz. And as soon as he came off stage, I said, let me go over here because I got to get him on Empowering You. So let me welcome to the show from the Gantt School of Music and Jazz, the Executive Director, Titus Gantt. Good afternoon.
Afternoon. Thank you for having me.
So what a story behind you. What a story behind you and what a story behind the Gantt School of Music and Jazz. I like the fact that you call it the School of Music, which defines it,
uh-huh.
But then you add jazz to the end of it.
Uh-huh.
Let's get into the mission of this school and what your purpose is and what your direction and your vision is for the school.
Yeah, so like I said, well, thank you for having me again. For the school, the mission of it is all of it is really based out of my life experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So the mission of the school is to help students get access to private lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that through, you know, paid services or through scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
And we also help students get access to instruments, quality instruments.
Mm-hmm.
So that they start off in the world of music that is with the leg up, you mm-hmm. know, on par with their peers,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, you know, you see a large amount of students, they don't have access,
mm-hmm.
Especially underprivileged students.
Right, right.
They just don't have access to those private lessons.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have access sometimes to an instrument at all, minus a good one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They just don't have access to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really the mission behind the school. Just give them, open the doors of access to music
mm-hmm.
for those children who otherwise they may not even be in the world of music at all.
It's interesting you mention that because I live in a neighborhood. My neighbor across the street does piano lessons.
Uh-huh.
And I constantly see this flow of cars coming on a daily basis, in and out, in and out.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the, as we were talking off mic, in most of the inner cities across the United States, music is not the first priority for a lot of families. Survival is, right, as you mentioned, in the inner cities. So did you have a personal experience when you were coming up as a musician that kind of triggered your idea in your head to provide this type of service?
Yeah, all of everything we do is really based off, you know, life experiences that I've had or that musicians have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But for me, it was like I started in terms of jazz, like a jazz musician. I know we were talking before.
Mm-hmm.
Most, you know, jazz musicians you hear about, they start off like at 4 or 5.
4 or 5 years old.
Well,
yes, sir.
I started in church.
Okay.
And that's where I started. You know, coming up, I was playing. I wanted to play the drums. You know, I got a little.
That was
joke.
A little bit too much noise in the house for you.
Yeah. Man, you know, we have a. You know, I grew up in a loving household. Mm-hmm, you know, I'm one of five kids.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom and my dad, you know, they were, you know, great.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, great. I had no dreams in the world that I had, you know, we were low income.
Mm-hmm. Had
no idea. I had no idea.
Right.
You know, my first drum set was a pair of sticks,
mm-hmm,
a couple buckets.
Oh, wow. The white buckets?
The white buckets.
Okay.
You got to get
the white
one.
Go ahead.
And some cymbals that my dad found somewhere.
Uh-huh.
I think they might have been some trash cymbals, uh-huh, like come out of the trash, not the trash. You know.
I got you. No.
Yeah.
Pull them out of the trash.
Right.
Okay. I got you.
So that was my first drum set. You know, drum set is the gateway instrument. You, mm-hmm, know, just get everybody in.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first drum set. Then started playing drums in church.
Okay.
Came out of Baptist church, so I remember when they got the drums in there.
Right.
You know.
Right.
It was almost sacrilegious,
right,
you know
right,
what
right,
I mean?
Right.
And then, you know, I started, you know, just singing and playing in church.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't start on saxophone until sixth grade.
Okay.
Sixth grade band. And it wasn't because I wanted to play saxophone. It was because they said, we got too many drummers. You need to play something else.
That was my next question. How did you transition from being a saxophone player? I mean, from a drummer to being a saxophone player?
Yeah, they just had too many drummers.
Okay.
Yeah, and they said, pick something else.
Okay.
Just point blank. And I was like, well, I guess I'll play that.
Wow.
That looks nice.
Wow.
And
how
so,
did you come up with you had a drum set that you practice on. If getting a drum set was difficult, then getting a saxophone had to be even more difficult because there are no buckets that you could put together and that kind of stuff to create that.
Right. You can't put some PVC pipe together and make a saxophone.
No.
So my first instrument, and you know, in hindsight you see a lot more.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you know, it came about where things happen in the family.
Mm-hmm.
I started playing in sixth grade.
Okay.
I was 11 years old.
Okay.
Same year, November, my father passes away.
Oh, wow.
So then we go from, you know, mom and dad sharing the household burdens to just mom.
Right.
And right before, one of the last kind of things he did, like he only heard me play one song, you know, like, mm-hmm, that I started playing. I started playing one song in church.
Mm-hmm.
God has smiled on me. And then, so anyway, and so then we have all this financial burden, but my mom refuses to, you know,
that's most
let
moms,
this
right?
go.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
They're going to get whatever their kids need.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so we had this monthly payment, paying monthly, mm-hmm, you know, paying rent to own,
mm-hmm,
on the saxophone.
Okay, I got you.
We didn't pay that off. You know, here I am to 12th grade.
Mm-hmm.
It took my mom from my sixth grade year
to
my 12th grade year to pay that instrument off.
Wow. That's what you call a hardship. That's tough,
especially
when you got four other kids that you have to pay attention to, and they have needs as well.
And I'm four.
I'm
4 or 5.
Okay, so you're near the bottom.
Right, I'm near the bottom.
Okay,
and so yeah, you got this, and so this is the connection between the school now,
mm-hmm,
and that experience is that if a student say they come to Gantt School of Music and they need an instrument.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things they do, they write an essay.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with the private lessons.
Mm-hmm.
They write an essay, 250 words, telling them, you know, tell us about your music story and what, mm-hmm, you want to do, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the parent, one of the qualifications is write a letter of hardship.
Okay.
Like, tell us what's going on in the family. Tell us what's going on so that, mm-hmm, we have an understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we provide this, then it's not like, well, we just kind of want it because, you know, we don't want to pay for it.
Right.
But it's a lot of our families that we get, it's always, you know, heart-jerking story.
Absolutely.
You know, always.
Absolutely.
And it's just real.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I understand it because, you know, I didn't, you know, my home came from a two-parent home, mm-hmm. then transitioned to mm-hmm. a one-parent, mm-hmm. single-mother mm-hmm. home. Mm-hmm. And one income, my mother worked as a CNA,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and that's hard work.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that's really hard work. And then for her to have to work for all those years,
mm-hmm.
and then I realized when I'm about to go to college that, hey, we just paid off the instrument. I'm like, we just paid off the instrument? I thought you know.
That
like,
was a while ago.
Yeah, that was a long, that was sixth uh-huh. grade, Mom,
uh-huh,
you know.
Uh-huh.
No, we was paying on this every
yeah,
month.
Yeah. Yeah.
For 7 years,
yeah.
Instrument costs and but, okay. I might start going on this, but that instrument wasn't great, had mm-hmm. leaks, uh-huh. had all kind of issues.
Uh-huh.
You know, we were paying as much as we could to pay it off, so we couldn't get it serviced.
Okay.
So then instruments, you know, begin to get leaks and
right,
problems
right,
and things
right.
like that.
Right.
I had all that time with the instrument. That instrument cost over $2,000.
Wow.
Student instrument.
Wow. Wow.
When I got to college,
mm-hmm.
I needed another instrument.
And so the price of the instrument is up at this point. You covered so many things in that story about yourself that we're going to get to about donations to the school and
yeah.
those kind of things. But my mindset goes back to, first of all, a parent is going to love their child in hardship regardless of what the circumstances are.
Mm-hmm.
No parent is going to discourage a child that wants and aspires to be whatever it is they want to be because they're not quote unquote good.
Right.
They're going to impart upon your life
mm-hmm.
whether you're good or not.
Right.
Now, whether or not they force you to practice as much as you should with the amount of money that they're putting in is a different story.
Right.
So I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that that was your motivation. So is that the basis of where you're coming from when you develop this idea for the Gantt School of Music and Jazz?
Well, that's just a part of it, you
okay.
know, because,
okay.
you know, that's the financial side and all that, because the parents shouldn't be penalized because of their,
mm-hmm.
you know, financial situation. The child shouldn't be penalized because of the parents'
mm-hmm.
financial situation. You know, just mm-hmm. because their bank account is small doesn't mean they're
let's call it life, because it's
right.
not it's not yeah that's just
right. life is life.
Yeah, yeah,
right
yeah.
it's
yeah.
inflation now, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's politics, but we ain't gonna get into that
right
part.
right. But yeah, so that's part of it. The other side was my musical experience.
Okay.
As a music major, I went to Claflin University.
Okay.
You know, HBCU out of South Carolina.
Know it well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right beside South Carolina State.
Right next
fence.
Door.
Right.
Can't even tell that they're separate.
Right, right. Well, if you look at the grass, you can. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But you know, I got my first private lesson uh-huh. at Claflin University.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
My first one.
Your first private lesson. So back up.
Mm-hmm.
From the sixth grade to the 12th grade, who was teaching you?
I had a band director.
Okay.
But, you know, my band director, you know, he did so much for us.
Okay.
But a lot of times when you're in a public school situation
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
as a band director, you can't commit to
every student.
No. And then, you know, I taught public school for almost 10 years.
Okay. Okay.
And when you're in that situation, mm-hmm. middle school, you mm-hmm. can want so much for your kids,
mm-hmm.
but you got administration saying, hey, we got 10 students there. We don't know where we want to put them. Let's put them in your class.
Right.
And they don't want to play.
Right.
So then you got people that you got to work with, discipline.
Yeah.
And then the other kids who really want to be there, you got to work with, you know, like,
right.
oh, well, you know,
right.
hang with me, hang with
you.
Me.
I got you.
So, yeah, from sixth grade to 12th grade, I did not have a consistent weekly private lesson.
Okay.
So that's just like, and I tell parents all the time, your listeners, you know, they probably know better, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, a private lesson in music is just like having a private, you know, tutor in math.
Absolutely.
Or English,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
if your student don't have to be behind to get a private tutor.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening is you get disparity
mm-hmm.
because kids who are underprivileged, they're not going to be looking for a private lesson, much less thinking about affording one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was coming up, I knew all the bills that my mom had to pay.
Okay, okay.
You know, I knew how much milk cost. Okay. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, a gallon of milk cost $3.16 back mm-hmm. in the day, you mm-hmm. know. It's probably $10 now. It's
it was less than that back in my day, too. So
right. It's probably
there.
More now.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the kind of thing we kept, you know, as a kid, you keep track of the bills and the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was coming up, a private lesson, I wasn't even thinking about it because financially it was out of reach. I already knew.
Mm-hmm.
And so weekly, every week, we talk about it. We're doing it over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Man, yeah, I got my first one at Clapham University.
Wow. This is Empowering You. Brian Anthony, your host, and we're talking to the executive director of the Gantt School of Music and Jazz, Titus Gantt. Sometimes we get in these conversations, I'll forget to even talk about that. So people know who you are
in case they
tune in late. Okay, let's go into your college years and what led you to, after, I guess, teaching in the mm-hmm. public school system, what led you to this venture that you're in now, the Gantt School of Jazz, Music and Jazz?
All right. Well, I've, you know, in Claflin, we, you know, they have a really good music education program
mm-hmm.
And education program in general where you can't, when you graduate, you are certified.
Okay.
You got your license and everything. You're ready to teach.
Okay.
So when I got through Claflin University, and as you know, got through Claflin, I went to North Carolina Central,
okay,
to their jazz program, the master's program. Okay. Went there, and when I left, you know, that's one. And these are you know long stories because you know there's a lot of stuff that happened down there. But one of the things that I wanted to do is make sure that you know students had the opportunity that I didn't have.
Okay.
Because I went through, you know, undergrad and master's, and I just saw how much I was missing. I missed out on,
mm-hmm.
you know. Like, I knew theory and all that kind of stuff, but I just, you know, man, what if I would have had 2 years of private lessons before I got there?
Mm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
like, what would have been?
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
And so when I left there and I came over, I started working at GCS in Guilford County.
Okay.
And I got in the classroom and I had two experiences in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
My first school, it was on, I should say, the other side of the tracks.
Okay.
You know, fully funded.
No, I get you. I get you.
I had students. We told them sixth grade coming in, it was a middle school,
mm-hmm.
sixth grade coming in, hey, you know, you don't have to buy the most expensive instrument out there. Just get this, get that. We had parents buying $3,000 instruments.
Wow.
We had, you know, I had one student bought like a $3,200 Barry saxophone for their beginner.
Wow.
And was like, it's okay because my brother got a sousaphone, and
wow. And just, a lot of times those kids, because it's their parents' passion,
mm-hmm.
it's not always their passion.
Right.
So they buy all these instruments.
Right.
And a year or two down the road,
mm-hmm.
the kid is sitting in the closet. They're not even touching it.
And it was so many different. I had a student that got there in sixth grade who was taking lessons since four,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and thought, you know, and I had, you know, thought it was better than everybody there,
okay.
you know, including me.
I got you.
You know what I mean? And so it's like I had that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had another experience the next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed at that school for about, you know, the rest of my time.
Okay.
Teaching middle school because, you know, went to the other side of the tracks.
Okay.
85-95% of students don't have an instrument at all.
Right, right.
And, you know, I had students who were just struggling,
mm-hmm.
you know, in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
But they came in as, in my class, they were a way of escape. You know, mm-hmm. that was, you know, their passion. So I had everything from kids on the spectrum mm-hmm. to teaching kids who, you know, teaching kids who are homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
practically.
It's crazy because, you know, when you're telling kids, go practice, go home and practice, go home and practice, go home and practice. And this is a story that I often tell, but it gives you a different perspective, because I had one student, a little small student, didn't think about it, wasn't thinking, you know, I just said, hey, get your practice charts. You know, I had him logging your practice. And he's like, well, Mr. Gant, I really want to practice. You know, I really want to get my homework done, but the shelter that I go to, it might be a little hard to practice my trumpet there. So can you make an exception for me? And I'm like,
Didn't even think about it.
Ripped my heart out. I'm like, oh man, you don't got to practice. I'm sorry. You know, you know, I didn't think about that. But you know, that's, and these experiences really led up to what we're doing with G-Mage.
Okay.
It's because, first off, you need a place. You need some type of way to allow these students who they don't have the means to get private lessons and have it done weekly. We do virtual lessons as well, but they don't have the means to access these on their own.
Right.
And then also they're just, you know, finding their way in life. And if you can have something that's stable and consistent for them, it does wonders just for them understanding consistency, discipline, focus, you know, those type of life things you need. And then on top of that, we have to, one of my principles is I have to teach them like every student. I got to teach them like they're going to be the next, you know.
Whomever. Aspiring to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you really don't know what they're able to do.
Right.
You don't know what they're going to be.
Right.
You know? And I think that's the important part, because if you don't do that, then you're cutting their legs off. Like you're stopping them before they even start.
Right.
So if you give them as many tools as possible, then it's on their plate what they want to eat or not.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And so those experiences really, really formatted or you know, codified what I wanted to do with Gant School of Music and Jazz, because you needed those things when you were a child.
Okay.
And if you don't get them, then you can't reverse time.
Right.
You know? And so those are crucial years that you gotta get it then.
Right.
You know?
The performance that you had at Downtown Jazz, you had a group of youth that accompanied you on stage. How do you go about selecting for a performance like that? They all come from your school, I'm assuming.
Well, actually, this is our first iteration of the jazz ensemble, jazz ensemble at Gant School of Music and Jazz.
Okay.
And what we did was, because we wanted to be a service to the community, you know, and honestly, I started it and I was like, well, you know, it'd be good for the community. And so come to find out, we right now are the only youth jazz ensemble in Greensboro.
Wow.
And, you know, it shocked me, because I was like, wait a minute, I thought there was another, you know, because, you know, I would love to have at least four or five, you know, that way you can do collaborations, you can do all these things, you know, in my mind, I'm you know, oh yeah, this is going to be great, you know. So, you know, now I see that it's a needed service, you know. And so what we did, we made it free. Like, you don't have to pay for it. You don't have to pay for entry. A lot of times you got to pay stuff to get in, like registration fees.
Right.
We made it free. And the kids that I had with me, they're some of my students that are taking private lessons with me. Some students who go to a virtual school, you know, that they're not in public school. Some students who are in public school. Students from, just all around in the community.
Right.
And we came together, we practice. We do a practice weekly. And, you know, I give them tunes. I teach them play this, play that. You know, listen to each other, work together. You know, all the fundamental things that you need, because it's all about building that relationship, building the understanding of jazz music.
Right.
And then also, you know, those experiences, because where else could you get that experience, you know, as a kid? That was another thing that, if I would have had that experience, just being able to get on the stage in a park in front of a sea of people.
Yeah.
And they play and then they applaud me. And I think, you know, that does wonders for your esteem.
It absolutely does. Yeah. I can't. I know the kids when we go to the John Coltrane Jazz and Blues Festival, which mm-hmm. is coming up Labor Day weekend. They do something similar.
Yeah.
They do a essay contest and they end up giving away new instruments through partnerships from companies that build instruments.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I remember Joe talking about that. Now, I haven't seen them perform, and I asked him the same question. Where do they perform? Do they get a chance to perform? Now, it'll be interesting to find out, networking-wise,
mm-hmm.
after we get through with this interview, how many people that are into similar projects that you're into, like with the Gantt School of Music and Jazz, to collaborate and to get out and perform, not just here, but nationally as well.
Yeah,
do you know Ron Carter? He's a professor. He's a music professor. I got to connect you with him.
Yeah.
At one point in time, he had one of the top high school jazz bands coming out of East St. Louis, Illinois. He teaches here in the region of this country. I got to connect you with him.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And then we'll connect you with some of the people over at the John Coltrane Jazz and Blues Festival so that they're listening, I'm sure.
Well, let me tell you, we reached out to them.
Okay.
And on this coming, the third, the youth ensemble from G Major is going to open up the show.
Oh, really? So you're on the show this year?
We're on the show this year.
Great.
Yeah, on the third, we're the first act.
You talk about a sea of people.
Yeah.
And how intimidating that is for somebody that's in high school or younger.
Uh-huh.
Amazing. It's an amazing experience for them and just the reception that they get from the crowd because they're, you know, the crowd is a true jazz loving crowd. So it doesn't matter who's playing as long as you're hitting the right notes. Let's get into your programs. So when a student comes to the Gantt School of Music and Jazz, what are the programs? I know you mentioned private lessons.
Mm-hmm.
You also mentioned the Jazz Youth Ensemble. What are some of the other programs that you have there?
Well, like I said, instrument scholarship that we do.
Oh, we're going to get into that. We're going to get into that with donations. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
We're
going
to get to the donation part because it takes money to do what you're doing, so we want people to realize that as well.
Right. Well, you know, we do scholarships for instruments. Mm-hmm. Private lessons and the Youth Jazz Ensemble are like one of the main things that we're going with right now.
Mm-hmm.
We also go into schools.
Okay.
So right now we do presentations and things for elementary, middle school, even mm-hmm. high school students.
Mm-hmm.
We have a jazz type of presentation that we do. Help out, you know, your jazz bands.
Mm-hmm.
Start them out. Mm-hmm. Either start them out. Help out the school band director.
Okay. So
a lot of times, you know, people kind of wonder, why is it that my school doesn't have jazz?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it might be because your band director is not comfortable with it.
Right.
And it's not that's not like a slight on your band director.
Right.
You know, that's one of the reasons why I went to Central mm-hmm. for the jazz part, because I wanted to be more comfortable with jazz music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's intimidating.
It is.
You know?
Because people don't realize when you get into a room full of musicians, most kids that take music are used to 3-4 time,
uh-huh.
half time, 4-4 time.
Mm-hmm.
You get into the jazz realm, the time is still the same, but there are so many offbeats, so many improvisations that are done.
Right.
You can take, and for me, when I was playing, the hardest part was to stay consistent with what I was doing, what my job was, which was rhythm, a certain type of rhythm, and I'm reading sheet music, and to hear somebody dip down, go off to the side, and do something that is totally not in sync with my rhythm throws me off.
And
you got to be able to handle that, and uh-huh. that's what jazz is.
Yeah. It's that constant evolution, like even like in the moment,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? And a lot of times you just don't, as a band director, sometimes you just don't get that instruction. You don't get that, you know, understanding when you're in school.
So nor do you know how to teach it.
I know, right.
Yeah, yeah.
So we go into school and we help with that as well. Mm-hmm. You know, if teachers want to help start a band, you mm-hmm. know, start a jazz band, things like that, we'll come in and do that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of different things that we do, but definitely the Youth Jazz Ensemble mm-hmm. and the private lessons are the main focal points of our program.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Since you make jazz an influence or a portion of your teaching,
mm-hmm.
From where you came from in terms of taking up playing an instrument at an early age and to now and performing at places like Downtown Jazz and the John Coltrane Jazz Festival, what have you seen about the evolution of your understanding of jazz and where it's heading in the future in terms of attracting a younger audience? Because when you think about jazz, the perception is, well, people have different perceptions.
Mm-hmm.
So
we won't
even get into that.
Okay.
they have different perceptions of what is jazz. A lot of people claim that they're turned off by jazz because of the straight ahead jazz.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand that if you don't understand what that is.
Right, it
makes sense because it sounds like listening to rock music on mm-hmm. acid, if that makes any sense.
Uh-huh.
I've never partaken, but I'm just telling you what I've heard described from other people. Now, in order to be able to handle that and to get into the jazz realm in the future, mm-hmm. what do you see coming up in music where you've been teaching and where jazz should go?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting multi-layered question.
It is.
From teaching it, you know, it's really it's experiential.
Mm, okay.
You know, comes to mind. You know, when I was teaching in public school, I had some kids that said that, hey, you know, I would say I'm starting a jazz band.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a band that we could come together and we can play, you know, popular stuff. We could play, you know, standard stuff. Mm-hmm. I taught them blues form, mm-hmm. you know, 12-bar blues form and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And the kids was like, oh, okay. All right, that's cool. You know, because, you know, the young kids now, they're like,
yeah.
Oh, okay, that's cool. You know, like, yep. And it's like blank face. They don't, mm-hmm. they don't show that they love it.
Yeah,
you know, they don't,
yeah,
no excitement
don't
on their face.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, all right, that's cool. You know, blank face.
Yeah.
And these kids, man, they start, you know, just regurgitating everything you give them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you give them a line, play this, boop, bop, do da, 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 and they go, bop, bop, do da, 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 da. You know, like it comes mm-hmm. out. You know, mm-hmm. and then they're one of the things that they're doing is they're happy that they can do something that you did.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
But then they also see as a teacher, like, oh, they're looking at me like, oh, you like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like.
The passion
oh,
in it.
Oh, yeah. You really like this, huh? Mm-hmm. You know. And so a part of this is them understanding, the next generation understanding that there's passion in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
this is more than just, you know, a fad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you know, popular music now, they play it 1,001 times on the radio. And then they know you like it because that's all you know.
There's a theory behind, because I came from commercial radio. I'm a part of the era that created that foolishness.
Uh-huh.
I get it, and I understand why they do it, and that's not for this discussion. But it makes sense if you realize that radio today is designed to, number one, give you what you say you like in
mm-hmm.
music.
Mm-hmm.
But the other part of that is we don't, as a community, we don't own our own radio stations anymore. We don't own our own record labels. So we don't have control over what is being presented through the microphone, through the speakers, and what our kids are getting.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have control over that. What I love about jazz mm-hmm. is, and I was just telling my grandson, it's interesting that we're talking about this. On the way back, now I listen to all kinds of music. I listened to hip hop. I ran 100.1 The Beat in Columbia, South Carolina.
Oh yeah,
I put that on the air.
Oh, okay,
in 2003.
Cool, nice.
But listening to that, I'm a fan of all kinds of music.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and we were talking about a specific North Carolina artist, and I'm not going to get into our debate about J. Cole and some of the other artists that are out here.
Uh-huh.
But I was telling him, you know, those are beats. There's a difference between beats.
Mm-hmm.
and real music.
Mm-hmm.
So we start listening to our station here on a mobile app.
Uh-huh.
And he sits and he listens and he plays a guitar.
Okay.
So it's like, what instrument is that? He'll tell me right off the top of his head what it is. I said, do you hear those instruments in rap music? He goes, no. I said, okay.
Yeah.
So there's a difference. There's a difference. But the kids, I think for me, moving into the future, one of the research studies that I've seen about jazz, it's only two of them that I've ever seen that exist that I know of, but it cries out about jazz's survival depends on how we're able to bridge the gap from those people who listen to jazz that we know listen to jazz, 35 plus.
Yeah.
What are we going to do with the 25 to 34?
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen with our presentation some success in attracting a 25, 34 listenership in our increase in numbers because of the pop instrumentation songs that we play and the R&B instrumentations. They're remakes of popular pop and R&B songs.
Right.
Interns come in here, they'll hear it pop up on the radio in here or walking down the hall and go, hey, that used to be one of my favorite hip hop tunes. Is that jazz? Yes, it is. Are they playing it? Are they or what are they doing? Are they singing it or are they playing it?
Right.
If it's instrumentation, they're playing it. It's typically jazz, but it's music. I like to call jazz music because that's what it is.
Yeah.
So that gap, I think that's helpful in educating a younger generation of people who like music or people who listen to music what jazz is, because once you get tired of hearing the hip hop, the beats, the same stuff over and over again, there's really no alternative unless you come over to jazz.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and I think I can speak to like the musicianship a little more because, you know, well, there's a lot of ways I can go with this, but
oh God, you know, people know that I'm very truthful and very transparent. So speak
Well, so one of the main things about jazz music is there's a lineage, you know,
history,
the history behind it,
yes.
It's mentorship,
yes,
you know, yes. It's like, you know, people put Dizzy Gillespie and Miles in different categories. Well, once upon a time,
they played together.
Exactly.
They all collaborated.
and so it's like, you know, that's another, you know, people, you know, they often question how the new generation is going to come, you know, is going to be able to mingle with jazz, you know. But what I've been finding, you know, I haven't been doing my own little research study. I don't have my own study published. But what I've been finding is students gravitate to mentorship
and what they're exposed to,
right? And and this is, I like to say this to students, it's like, well, you know, you haven't heard it yet, so you don't know if you like it or not. You know,
that's true.
So just kind of listen to it and see what happens, you know.
That's a great idea.
And then you know, you got to put a little, you know, what they used to do, they used to put some you know, back in the day, old school. you know, I'm young, but I know some old school stuff.
No, I'm there with you. Go ahead.
So in the day, you know, they used to, you know, if you couldn't eat a pill or something like that, they'd crunch it up and put a little honey in it and stir it up. And you know what I mean? And so it's like, you put a little bit of something in there in the instruction. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's like, you know, you put a little feel on that. You know, like, well, if it sounds good. The kids hear it. The kids know what, people know what sounds good.
They do. Like, they know what they like.
And it puts a, you gotta, it's like a, it's hard to explain. You gotta see it happen, you know? You gotta see the expression and the body language that the kid, you know, that changes when they get a jazz line, you know?
Yeah.
Or when they start understanding the language a little bit more,
right,
you know?
Right. Right.
And then, you know, I'm in the lesson. I'm like, you hear that sound? It's like, yeah, I hear it. You know,
they can feel it coming.
They can feel it. And so I don't know that I have so much of a negative connotation when it comes to the next generation, because I see them in every sphere of life doing things against the norm.
Absolutely.
You know, like against the mold. Like, oh, I don't like, you know, one of, it's almost like, Patrick Bartley doing his techno, you know, like the music that he loved. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
it's like he got 2 feet in both, you know, on both sides.
Right,
and it's like, it's just crazy how much the next generation is pulling from, you know, everything that they can find, you know, and melded it into to what they are, you know, mm-hmm. and that's new.
You know what I find amazing in developing this particular format,
mm-hmm.
and I knew I was going to get it. I was concerned about going to a more modern sound in
yeah.
jazz,
yeah.
which means just putting everything in a pot and letting it cook. That's mm-hmm. what jazz is. I was more concerned about the pushback from those traditionalists
mm-hmm.
that like straight ahead jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And as I hear all the time, I don't hear it all the time, but when I do hear it, that's that elevator music. Really?
Mm.
Elevator music. Let's take this into consideration. Elevator music means it's playing in a place where there are masses of people.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
People come and go out of there all the time. Now, this music is representing the flair of your company.
Right.
Do you think that they're going to put something on those speakers that's not popular?
Right.
So if it's elevator music, that means that there's a certain popularity to it.
Right.
But I think what they mean is, for the most part, they're talking about it being taken away. The same complaint that Miles Davis got when Miles Davis went a little bit more to the center of contemporary jazz
mm-hmm.
as opposed to traditional jazz.
Right.
He started playing Sweet Dreams Are Made of These and all these different R&B cuts and mm-hmm. all these pop cuts, and people were losing their minds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in putting this station together, I was very cautious of that. But then I'm adamant about a Regina Bell who sings jazz,
mm-hmm.
a Chaka Khan who sings
yeah,
jazz,
very good,
Anita Baker who sings jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah, they're R&B artists, because somebody called me and said, I hear you're playing R&B artists on your station. No, well, that's because you all call them R&B artists. I have artists or singers singing jazz cuts on a jazz artist's project, like Cyrus Chestnut, Anita
mm-hmm.
Baker,
mm-hmm.
sings a couple of songs on there, My Favorite Things and Something Else.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear it, I love seeing people's reaction. Is that Anita Baker? Yes.
Right.
Yeah, she can sing. If you can sing, if you can play, you can play. It doesn't matter the genre of music.
All right.
So that's what I'm most comfortable with, and I think that the younger generation, just being exposed.
Yeah.
Just
and
being exposed.
Exposed. And it's like, I remember the first time I heard, what was the name? Ray Charles on saxophone.
I've never heard that.
Yeah,
I don't
man.
Think I've heard that.
I remember the first time I heard Ray Charles play sax, alto. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Jazz lines, too. Language.
Yeah.
You know, putting it in, you know,
if
language.
You, if you know music, if you take music, if you get the basics of music, you can play anything.
Right.
If you get the basics of singing, you can sing anything.
But you know what? Jazz teaches you, it gives you so much, like,
confidence
and the, you know, just the understanding of
mm-hmm.
music
mm-hmm.
because it's so fluid.
Mm-hmm.
You could go anywhere. I mean, you have to understand all the technical, you know, theoretical things
mm-hmm.
behind jazz.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, it's crazy because, you know, back in the day, 20s, you know, 1920s
mm-hmm.
stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
You know, they're doing stuff with, like, Duke Ellington's band
mm-hmm.
that is like, well, make sure they don't have stands because we don't want them, you know, why they don't want them to have stands?
Right,
we don't want the people to think you're reading music, so they got to memorize the whole show, you know? And so it's crazy stuff like that happened, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that kind of stuff, you know, is still happening in the music world, you
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah, it is.
But you got to know so much theoretical stuff to understand jazz,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
but then
mm-hmm.
also there's people that, you know, show that you don't really have to, you can understand that in a different way. You
right.
can understand that through the language and the storytelling, you
right.
know, the
right.
way, because, you know, it's African-American music. You
right.
know, it's an art form from us, you
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, that's from me, like, when I started playing music, I playing in church.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So playing by ear was never a problem for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I started playing saxophone. What was I going to do? I started playing in church,
right,
you know,
right,
seventh,
right.
eighth, you know.
Right.
When I was in seventh grade, I started playing in church.
Right, right.
You know, didn't know that my instrument was a different key than the piano. The piano said, we in E flat. And I'm like, no, you're not. Let's
right.
figure out where we at. You know, not understanding. I got to transpose,
yeah,
you know, stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just playing by ear and making, you know, it's really understanding, you know, the type of music that we play
mm-hmm.
and then getting that, bringing, transferring that understanding to the kids, you know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
it's a whole nother thing with kids because, you know, you got to treat kids like they worth something.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. That's where the confidence level in
there. Yeah.
That's how they get to a point where you don't have to worry about their confidence level.
Uh-huh.
They're very aggressive in their approach to different things that they're passionate about.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I love about it. Once again, we're talking to Titus Gant, the executive director of the Gant School of Music and Jazz. I was introduced to them in the last Downtown Jazz series when I saw them perform, opening for Marcus Anderson. Now, let's get into the important part as we get ready to wrap up. Let me start with this. When people see that you're doing phenomenal things,
mm-hmm.
they don't have a problem supporting you.
Mm-hmm.
In a nonprofit situation, in all nonprofits, fundraising is one of the most difficult things to do to keep your mission afloat, to get it to thrive and to get it to grow. We're going to talk about fundraising, but one of the things that I did see when I was doing research on your school, anytime you have are doing something that's well worthwhile and is recognized in the community, the best way for that to happen is to get the support of somebody that's in your field.
Mm-hmm.
You've received a donation from the Stephen Tanger Center that is recently been built by the city of Greensboro.
Mm-hmm.
Resides in downtown Greensboro, Fabulous Center. Now, it's a venue for any type of concert, but it specializes in like classic music and jazz music because of the way it's acoustically built.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that relationship and how that came about.
Well, you know, the whole project hasn't been, you know, fully realized yet, so I'm not going to spill too much of the beans.
Okay, good.
But
good.
Basically, we've contacted them about some things that we're, you know, doing in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, soon, you know, the first phase of that partnership is a video project,
mm-hmm.
that we're doing, and it's just going to help us to, you know, promote the business, promote what we're doing in the community, and, you know, I don't want to talk too much,
but
at the same time, it's, you know, hopefully it'll sprout into some other things as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's definitely important, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one, because of its stance in the community, and
mm-hmm.
two, because we don't have a brick and mortar as of yet,
mm-hmm.
you
mm-hmm.
know, it provides even more, clout
mm-hmm.
for the community, you know what I mean, that type of thing.
Legitimacy, clout,
yeah,
any
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But yeah, we were definitely appreciative from them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's definitely, I should say, you know, in terms of, you know, the donation is definitely, you know, one of our largest,
mm-hmm.
not the largest donation that we've gotten so far,
mm-hmm.
Since 2019.
Okay.
So,
okay.
You know, it's quite substantial.
Good, good. Now, if you're hearing this and I'm glad we got into a lot of conversation and a lot of your thought processing about jazz,
mm-hmm.
since it's a part of your title.
Yeah.
And what you do for the kids that are in your school. Tell us about the different ways that people can offer support to the Gant School of Music and Jazz through donations and mm-hmm. instrumentation donation.
Right. Well, through donations, you can go to GMAJ, www.gmaj.org/give.
Mm-hmm.
And there you'll find the different levels of donorship.
Mm-hmm.
We do monthly donorship. We call them impact donors.
Okay.
You know, they make the most impact by donating monthly, or annually.
Okay.
And so they can go to our website and give, and then also instruments,
mm-hmm.
things that we do. We give out instruments to students,
mm-hmm.
That can't afford them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of, you know, it goes back to that life experience of having that $2,000 instrument that took 7 years to pay off. It's like, that's a financial burden that families shouldn't have to bear.
Right,
like, you
right,
know,
right.
especially if they got something going on, you know,
mm-hmm.
Like a loss of a family member, you
mm-hmm,
know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they do the same process, essay, you know, letter of hardship or, mm-hmm. you know, that type of thing.
Okay.
They apply and they get an instrument. Sometimes we buy them new.
Okay.
Sometimes they're donated, but when they're donated, we get them serviced and they're like new.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Like I'm a musician And so I understand, you know, and I understand kids nowadays, they like shiny things, you know.
Sometimes you have to get that cleaner out and clean the instruments and give them that perception that is clean or new.
Right. But yeah, and also on the programs that we do, we're always looking for sponsorship for programs that we do. So one of the programs that we do is a jazz workshop.
Okay.
A jazz workshop that's not only just for, you know, adults, but for kids. And you don't have a lot of things that's happening for kids. I think that's another thing that bridges that divide that we talked about earlier. Because when we have something that you can bring your kids to, you know, that kid-friendly, then, you know, not only are they getting out of the house, you know, getting off the iPad, but then they see that, okay, I see myself on stage.
It's called exposure. I mean, it goes back to exposure. Kids are going to grow into what they're exposed to.
Right.
If for whatever reason, we're not going to place blame at all, but for whatever reason, there are a lot of people going through a lot of things.
There are.
As we talked about life, just calling it life.
Right.
There's a lot that goes into that. But if you are a parent who wants you better for your kids and you know that they have certain passions, it's up to you to find a way to, not necessarily monetarily, but expose them. Right. The minimum exposure will help introduce them to a world of things that they don't know anything about and that they're not exposed to.
Right.
And that's helpful.
Yeah. And it only takes one time.
That's all it takes.
And so we reach out to business owners.
Okay.
You know, they have entrepreneurs that are looking to, you know, put their money or give back to the community. We reach out to them to sponsor our events, sponsor, you know, children, get on our impact donor list. And those are all different ways that they can donate. If somebody wants to donate a piece of property to us, they can. Piece of land, they can.
Office space.
You know, office space.
Practice facility.
Any of that. Any of that. Because all those things can go into the good use.
Okay.
You know,
it's
all centered to help a child. I was just in a meeting and with another musician, and one of the things I told her was the serious side of this, you know. This is business, but the serious side of this is those children.
First priority.
Once you can't, we can't as a community, but more importantly, we can't, the organization, we can't afford to let this child down.
Right.
They're already going out on a limb.
Right.
And if they're coming in like I was, you know, low income, like I know my parents' bills, you know, I know what's going to hurt and what's okay, you know, they're already reaching out on the limb to provide these services, and if we let them down, they're not reaching out anymore. That's it.
That's all it takes is one to destroy somebody's self-esteem.
That's why that's why this work is so important.
Good,
because we can't afford to let these children down. Not now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting conversation. Good conversation. That's why I knew I needed to get you on here. Performing at, you know, with the jazz, Youth Jazz Ensemble at the Downtown Jazz Series, John Coltrane Jazz and Blues Festival, being donated to by the Stephen Tanger Center.
Yep.
Now, after this conversation, I think my audience understands why I felt it so important to get you on here to expose your school, the Gantt School of Music and Jazz, so that people know it exists.
Oh, yeah.
So that people know it exists. And those, we have a lot. This, what I love about the Triad is that it is very culturally rich in the arts. And the support for the arts is huge here. And I think just like we're talking about exposing the kids, it's time we expose the Gantt School of Music and Jazz as well, so that you can reap some of the benefits of what you're trying to get done in terms of your mission, getting to kids that need the exposure. And once they get it, they get the passion and go on to great things in life.
Oh, yeah.
So I appreciate your time. Anything that we've missed that you want to add to this?
No, I you know, I just appreciate the time, appreciate being able to be on your platform, and you know, appreciate the community for being so receptive to us.
Yes.
Because, you know, once you put your, you know, you put your dream out there and you think, you know, well, that's stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, then you start thinking,
No, it doesn't. Maybe. It doesn't feel like that until you start seeing those bills coming in, and you
right.
how
right.
you're going to pay them.
Right.
Once again,
right.
Titus Gant, thank you very much, Executive Director of the Gant School of Music and Jazz. Hopefully, our listening audience has gotten a wealth of information out of this discussion about what you do, and sees it as an alternative—not an alternative, but extracurricular activity that they can expose their kids to,
right,
that are going
right.
to help them develop in the future. So, thank you so much for your time. And keep up the great work, and anything that we can do to help support that, please let us know in terms of getting information out and getting messaging out.
Yeah, definitely will. Thank you again. God bless.